Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Good afternoon, everybody. And I echo the welcome to our guests. It's so wonderful to have young people with us. The last time I talked to you, I spoke about some of the amazing things that can be seen in God's physical creation. I have difficulty getting away from that concept, and I'm convinced, as I mentioned then, that God has made nothing by accident. Everything that God has made is for a wonderful purpose. In my life, I've done quite a bit of fishing. I grew up on the North Shore, not really about a half a block away from the North Shore, of Lake Monona in Madison, which is considered to be the smaller of the two lakes that encompass the city. I had a fishing pole then. I would guess that it was about 8 or 9 feet long. And it had a string attached to the end, and down at the bottom it had a hook. And we usually had a little piece of lead on it. It was called a sinker, so it wouldn't stay up near the top of the water. And we attached a cork to it. And a cork is just what it sounds like. It was a cork. Something that you'd see today maybe in a bottle of wine. But in those days you could buy them at the store for a penny. And I'd go down to the lake and I'd use worms to try to catch bluegills and other panfish. We call them panfish. Now, worms, of course, were their food, or at least part of their food. I used them because I knew that it would be enticing to them. If you ask any small boy how to get worms, he knows how. You take a flashlight and a can and you go outside after it's dark out, and the worms are all over the top of the ground. And you just pick them up and put them in your can. My dad used to add sphagnum moss to that and stir them up, and they were happy as can be. When I got to be about a teenager, and I had a bicycle, I would say 12, 13 years old, I could ride my bicycle over to the other lake, which was much bigger and had a larger selection of fish. And there was also a bait shop along the way, and I could stop and get some minnows, which also fish enjoyed. If I were going to fish for the panfish, I would use the worm and fish down where I lived. But if I wanted to go for the big stuff, walleyes, northerns, bass, I'd use a minnow and go to the big lake. There was a sporting goods store about 5 blocks from my house, and they had something else. They were called artificial lures, and oh, were they beautiful and expensive. They had a rack that came right about to here on me. It was glass. It was about this wide, and if I'd push the button, it would do this and go all the way to the ground, each row of all these beautiful artificial lures. I don't know if they worked, but they were all sizes and shapes made of wood in those days. They didn't have plastic, and with metal hooks on them, of course, and a place to put your line. They had them that were this big. If you were going after muskies, this is bigger than most of the fish I caught. They were wonderful, and they were very expensive, but I just thought they were so beautiful. Before I pretty much stopped fishing, although I didn't really stop right away, I mean, but when I did, I had one artificial bait. It was called a daredevil. It was the cheapest of the baits, and it was a piece of metal with a red-white stripe on one side and silver color on the other side and 3 hooks, and it would twirl. Because when I was older, I had a spinning rod, then I could get that. I want you to consider the name, if you would, of what they had in the sporting goods store. Artificial lure. Artificial lure. As I mentioned, depending on what fish I was after, I'd use different baits. Let's look at Mark, please, the first chapter. Read some verses that we've considered a number of times. Where I lived, it was illegal, it was unlawful to use a net. You couldn't throw a net in the water and catch fish. That wasn't allowed. That was unlawful. You had to catch them on a hook. Otherwise, that wasn't sporting. Mark 1, verse 14, it says, after John was put in prison, Jesus came to Galilee preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God and saying the time is fulfilled. The kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel. And as he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew's brother casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishes of men." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. Got a question for you. If Jesus was going to make them fishes of men, do you think that perhaps Satan takes exactly the same approach? Is he a fisher of men? Satan, to me, is just like a fisherman. He's actively trying to hook God's people, and once they're hooked, it's awful tough to get off the hook. I also suspect that he's got an awful lot of different kind of baits, and most of them, no, all of them, brethren, are artificial lures. The apostles would be taught to teach the truth of God, but Satan would lure people with artificial lures. My purpose today is to consider three of the baits that Satan uses. He has all kinds of variations on these baits. The whole purpose of his baits are to kill people, to kill the fish that he catches. The three baits are number one, anger, number two, lust, and number three, pride. And they are all, and all of their variations, are artificial lures. Let's look at Matthew 4 and look at the verses that we know that tell us about Jesus Christ being tempted, and I want to show you how he's using these three in various variations to try to tempt Jesus Christ. Matthew 4, the very first verse, says Jesus was led up into the Spirit by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. When he had fasted 40 days or nights afterwards, he was hungry. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, "If you're the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." In that statement, we see all three of these artificial lures. It doesn't say that Christ was angry, but I suspect that he was. Now, don't misunderstand me. You can be angry and not sin. He didn't sin. But certainly there was lust. He hadn't eaten for 40 days. There was a desire for that, and there was the potential for pride. He threw all three of them at him at once. He answered and said, "It's written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Now Satan goes on and tempts him twice more that we read of. He asks him to tempt God, and he offers him everything that he has. And again, he uses the same three, anger, lust, and pride, temptations, very specific variations of these. Now, I don't know this because it doesn't say this, but I'm suspicious that he actually, in the time he was with him, offered him a lot more stuff. But I'm also suspicious that he used the same three artificial lures to try to tempt him. I know this isn't the only time that he's tempted, because in the parallel account in Luke 4, it says Satan left him until another more appropriate time. I'd like to start with anger. Turn to Proverbs. Proverbs actually is kind of loaded with one-sentence quips about anger. We'll look at chapter 14. We'll look at a couple of them. Because I think that the way that it's described is really good. In Proverbs chapter 14, we'll start in verse 29. Proverbs 14:29 simply says, "He who is slow to wrath has great understanding." I used to work for a Greek, and this man was amazing to me. I mean, he had a lot of faults. He was as proud as you could be. He didn't anger, or if he did, he didn't show it. He would consider what was said, and he might answer you tomorrow. But he didn't respond to that anger. It says, "He who is impulsive exalts folly." Well, that's, to me, where anger becomes destructive, when you are impulsive and you want to get back. I have found in my own life that two things I noticed, now I'm not saying that's all, but two things I noticed made me very susceptible One was driving a car. Now, why that is, I don't know. As silly as it sounds, I know I've talked to you about that many times in the past, but I find now when I mow the lawn, I don't drive the car nearly as much now I stop working, so I drive around the lawn, you know, and I'm doing it for a long time because of the big grass. I find myself talking to myself, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? Well, he's throwing an artificial lure in front of me, trying to get me to bite. So I change the subject, I start singing songs. Also, when I'm tired, I think that's probably when he hits a lot of people when they're tired, you know? Drop back to verse 17. A quick-tempered man acts foolishness. Acts foolishly. Yeah, quick to temper, quick-tempered. I've known quick-tempered people, you have too. You know, there's a kind of a fish that you don't go after with food. You try to get him mad. It's true. We didn't have any trout streams where I live. I had the lakes and I had a creek near me, and what was called a river, though it wasn't. But out west, southern half of California on the west coast, plus Idaho, Oregon, Washington, they go after what's called the steelhead trout. They can get real big. But those guys who are going after them are just going after them. And the idea is you pass the bait in front of them, because when you do, they get mad at it. And I don't know who determined that that's what they're doing, but somebody did. Because they're not after food, they're just after this thing to bite it because it's going in front of them. As I say, nothing in God's creation is an accident. The result, if he gets a hold of the hook, I guarantee you is the same. Number two, lust. Lust. The Greek word for lust is epithumia, epithumia. More accurately, it means forbidden. Forbidden. And the root of it is literally longing or desire. So you long for the forbidden. Let's look at 1 John. 1 John. The forbidden. I didn't give you my title, did I? Shame on me. It's avoiding the artificial lure. Avoiding the artificial lure. 1 John 2. John says simply, do not love the world or the things in the world. That's 1 John 2:15. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. 1 John 2:16. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides. I must have read three pages in a Bible commentary about verse 16, but I think we know what it means. I think we know what it means. Longing or desire. The forbidden. The forbidden. When I was a young teen, I'm going to say 12, my dad used to take me a couple times a year down to a town just south of Madison called McFarland. Now, I know that some of you know where that is because there's two guys in here who live there. And there's a girl that used to live there, but I don't know if she still does or not. But there was a little bit of a waterfall there. The road would go, and the water would go under the road. And there was a man that I often saw there, and it was amazing to watch him. I learned to imitate him. He would stand next to the bridge, which means he was next to the water so that he could shoot his bait under the bridge. And what he used for bait was a small piece of facial tissue. He took out the piece of facial tissue, tore off a piece, put it back in his pocket, put the facial tissue on his hook. And he'd shoot it under there and he'd wiggle it around, you know, and pretty soon he'd catch a fish, and he did it with such regularity that I often didn't fish, I'd just sit and watch. One day he ran out of tissue and he asked, does anybody have a piece of tissue? I felt so honored to be able to give him a piece of tissue that I had in my paper, in my pocket, excuse me. Can you imagine a fish that's that stupid that he would eat a piece of paper? That's an artificial lure. Our longing, brethren, can be anything that Satan uses to draw us away from God. It doesn't have to be something that we would think would make sense. It can be anything. What God offers is genuine. It's real. He doesn't offer us anything that's artificial. As I mentioned earlier, once we're on the hook, it's very difficult to break off. Christ was tempted, but he did not sin. Sometimes the lust is a lust for power. Don and I have been watching a series of documentaries lately about famous people, mostly famous people that were of our lifetime, you know, not all. We watched one about Churchill, a very, very intelligent man and a war hero during World War II. But it became evident in the documentary that as he aged, he even had a heart attack and didn't bother to tell anybody because he didn't want to give up power. We watched one recently on Theodore Roosevelt, another genius of a man. Now, he took office something like 3 weeks after he was elected to be the vice president. The president died, so he was in office 4 years, then he ran again for a full four-year term, after which, immediately after he was elected, he said, "I will not run again." And it kept repeating through this documentary that he regretted saying that the minute that he said it, and he regretted it through his final 4 years. He did end up running again 4 years later, but he was defeated. About in the 1980s or thereabouts, there was a country in Africa that was called Rhodesia. Most of you will remember it. There was segregation practice there that was called apartheid. And many of our segregation leaders went down there, telling them this was evil and they should do away with it. And so they had democratic elections and they elected a new president who's been their president ever since. He's in his 90s now. And in the words of National Geographic magazine, he's been at war with his people ever since. I read recently that his wife, who's much younger, has said, "Don't worry, when he dies, I'll take over." So the lust for power can be for sure interesting. Let's look at Joshua 6. Joshua 6. I find it always amazing how easy God's instructions are to understand. They really are easy to understand. It's just that the artificial lures take us often away from them. At least they strive to. Joshua 6 tells a story we all know. It's about a time when Israel had just conquered the city of Jericho. And God gives instruction, and see if there's something here that we don't understand. He says in verse 18, Joshua 6, "And you by all means abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. All the silver, gold, vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord, and they shall come into the treasury of the Lord." That's it. That's it in a nutshell. Now, you know the English can be a little bit deceptive. In a word, what he means is you don't touch anything. Don't take anything. You don't take anything for yourself. You just bring the metals into the treasury of God. Well, of course, we know what happens in chapter 7. Chapter 7, a man named Achan had a problem with not taking anything. So he helped himself to a few things. Joshua at this point sent 3,000 or so men up to a town called Ai, A-I, and they lost. 36 men lost their lives. So Joshua falls on his face before God. And look at verse 10. God says something very, very, very interesting to Joshua. He says, "Joshua, get up. Why do you lie thus on your face?" This is chapter 7, verse 10. "Israel has sinned." I find that interesting. Israel has sinned. "They've transgressed my covenant that I imposed on them. They have taken some of the devoted things they have stolen, and they have acted deceitfully and put them among their own belongings." In essence, somebody bit on an artificial lure. Verse 21, guilty Achan. He says, "When I saw the spoils, a beautiful Babylonian garment, 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them and I took them. And there they are, hidden in the earth in the midst of my tent with the silver under it." I've always said Achan caused a lot of Achan. He just had to have it, man. He just had to have it. There's a commercial on television now, I get the biggest kick out of it. It shows a woman in her living room with her friend, and they're looking at the woman's new couch. And the woman says, "I just had to have it, man. I just had to have it." You've probably seen it. The next scene is at night, and there's a couple of shady guys. You can tell they're shady because they got, you know, stocking caps and dirty faces and stuff. That's what crooks always look like. And the guy says to his friend, "I just got to have it, man. I just got to have it." It was an ad for an insurance company. We have to be careful with what we just got to have. Much of it can be an artificial lure. Let's look at number three, which is pride. The third tool, the third artificial lure that Satan, with his many varieties, throws in front of us. Consider the problem of delusions of grandeur. I'm going to pick on a couple of professions now. It can happen to anybody. I don't care who they are, what profession they're in. I'm not going to mention any names. But singers and entertainers really give themselves a lot of awards. They have all kinds of organizations to give them another award. And I'm not bragging. When I was in high school, I used to try out for every play and every operetta they had, and I always got the lead. Yippee! You know what you do when you do that? You pretend that you're somebody else. Yeah, that's what you do. When you're acting, you pretend that you're somebody else. And when you sing a song. Oh, but when you got a million screaming kids, they got to have that record, man. You can really begin to think that you're great stuff. You know, it's ironic in a way that last week we had both a sermonette and a sermon that dealt with humility. I prepared this a month ago. God must want us to hear it. Let's look at Ezekiel 28. We know what this is about. Ezekiel 28:12, it's going to talk about the one that was named Hillel, who became Satan. Verse 12, it says, of Ezekiel 28:12, "Son of man, take up a lamentation for the king of Tyre and say to him, Thus says the eternal God, You are the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the sardius, topaz, diamond, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald and gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day that you were created." Again, without quoting all that it said, I read pages and expositors on this verse. And in essence, the stuff that he was given is unbelievable. The talents, the wisdom. There was a section on the wisdom of Solomon, and I couldn't believe the extent of it. But to consider this being, who was much wiser and more beautifully adorned, I mean, he had his own musical capabilities that probably were the capabilities of a full orchestra. And yet we know what happened next. Some call it the original sin. Original or not, it's not humility, it's pride. Consider the bully in school. Did you have a bully in school? Yeah, I guess we all did. Or two. They probably grow up to be bullies where they work. Last week, again, I skipped a few of these verses because we read them last week. But last week, both the sermon and the sermonette talked about Nebuchadnezzar and how Daniel came before Nebuchadnezzar to interpret what he had been told, and he was told, "You're going to become an animal because you don't give honor to God who gave you all that you have." He was given then a full year, and he still didn't change his mind, and so he became an animal and ate grass. By the way, I've been told that grass is really very good for you. Just we don't digest cellulose, but I guess it has lots of nutrients. And who follows is Belshazzar. He knew what happened, and he still did the same thing. When I'd ride my bike over to the big lake, there was a body of water that connected the two lakes. It was called the Ahara River. It's still there, of course. It isn't really a river. It's a connector between the two lakes. It isn't started with a spring. But rather, the lakes are at different levels. I think that the big lake is about 8 feet higher, 10 feet higher than the lesser lake. And if they just let the water flow down, I think a lot of lakefront property on the small lake would become flooded forever. So they keep the lakes at different levels, and you go through there with, they have locks, they call them locks. You drive in with your boat, and the water goes up, and then you go out on the other lake. Anyway, near the large lake, there was some lagoons. I used to skate on them as a kid in the wintertime. There was a bridge again that went under there. And there was also a man that fished there. And I don't remember his name either, but it's not important. He had only a what we called a cane pole, which was a big long stick of bamboo with a string on it. But he had boots, and the boots came up to here. And he could walk into the river, and he could throw his line way under the bridge. And those stupid fish in there, they just couldn't live without it. And he caught them, and we'd sit, and we'd watch, and we'd applaud, and he'd just give fish to people, and they loved it because they were getting fish. They wouldn't have caught any fish. We can hide from Satan, but he knows when we're under the bridge. He knows where we are, wherever we are. He knows where we are, and he wants us dead, even if we're under the bridge. We can find fish in virtually every lake and stream there is, and you know there's fish in the oceans too. Fish are hungry and they're stupid. Compared to people, compared to Satan, we're stupid. Compared to people, Satan's very smart. Without the power of God, we can never outsmart Satan. Humans have a lot of weaknesses, and Satan knows them all. He knows every single one of them, and he's got an artificial lure for every one of them. And he can make these lures seem very alluring. If we find them inviting, brethren, we are going where God has told us not to go, just like he told Achan. When I consider being tempted by Satan, and it happens constantly, I feel the obvious answer for all of us is that we can't come close to his power and his capabilities. He knows how to climb into our mind. He also has many variations of all the lures that he offers us, not just these three, but he has variations on them all. But they're all artificial. Every single one of them is artificial. If we're dumb enough, we might even bite on something like a small piece of tissue paper. No matter how great the lure seems, it's never to us anything more than a bowl of beans. The key to resisting is also very, very interesting. It's just so simple to understand. But Dad, Jim Buckmaster, remember Jim Buckmaster? He has a license plate that says, "But Dad." Yeah, that's the problem. But Dad. Our greatest weapon, brethren, is for sure to be alert and so close to God that Satan's lures are easy to detect. And with the strength of God, when we're close to him, we won't bite on an artificial lure.